Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Bowerly and Bellavia. Tom and Dave are out today. It is 5:08 on a Friday evening. Back to your car and on your way home and after a long day at work and a short week. Welcome to Bowerly and Bellavia, News Radio 930 WBEN. I got to tell you, I've really enjoyed taking your calls. 803-0930, star 930 on your cell phone. This last hour of my live segment here. But I want to read some of these texts because people have been texting on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board at 30930. Several. I need to get to some of them. Let me see here. All right. They may not have said it, this one guy. I want to remind people. They did do seditious acts as ends justify the means. I think that's important for everybody to hear again. Maybe they got into this, the people like Comey and Brennan and others, because of their skewed worldview and what they thought was appropriate for America, who could serve as president and who could not. But they kept doubling down, and at some point in time, they probably broke the law. We saw dozens of errors in the FISA process, and honestly, they all fell against the president. So clearly this was not an accident. These weren't errors. These were intentional problems that they put together in order to try and trip the president up. Well, it didn't work, of course. But this time around, we need to understand that in the impeachment, the process is different, but it's not sedition. The impeachment articles from the House may be insufficient. They may not have risen to what the Constitution calls high crimes and misdemeanors, which is what they need to prove the president has committed in order to indict or impeach him. But who gets to define what a high crime or misdemeanor is? Not you or me. The majority party of the House of Representatives gets to define that. So the House of Representatives could have impeached, same word, the president for crossing against the red, for jaywalking, if they determine it's a high crime or misdemeanor. They can call whatever they want a high crime or misdemeanor. Clearly, they find this lightly laid out accusation of abuse of power, some kind of a law. I haven't seen any law in those articles that they claim he broke. Nothing serious. So, yeah, did they commit sedition? Maybe not so far. Certainly not in the House. They get to do what they want to do and call it whatever they want to call it. Once they deliver those articles of impeachment to the Senate, he is officially impeached. Not impeached yet, but he will be officially impeached. And because they want to stamp that I on him, they will eventually turn those articles over. They'll ride the publicity of holding them for another couple of days. I predict they'll turn those in before the week of January 6th, they will turn them over to the Senate. So another text here, 30930, Michael, love listening to you. If you can, tell us more about the book you're working on and the first one you wrote. Would love to purchase the first one and hear more about the second one. I don't mind, but I do want to tell you my podcast, where I talk about this stuff more blatantly, this incredible marketing opportunities, right, is stillstandingpodcast.com. Stillstandingpodcast.com. On radio.com, the WBEN platform, the Entercom platform, radio.com, you can find me Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I do a weekly podcast, which I'd welcome you to subscribe to. I've talked about it a bit. I was writing a book under contract with Bombardier Books called Putin Won, How America's Rival Turned the Country Against Itself. And it's a full, 85,000-word article, a book about my life, what led me to the situation I got in, my life in Russia, my life in Washington, my time with Trump, and how my family dealt with these investigations. There's a lot of things in there I have not spoken about publicly, and things that you'll be very surprised and shocked at. That book, I was about half to two-thirds the way done writing it when I made a decision to fly to Ukraine to do a documentary on Biden and Ukrainian collusion with the Democratic Party to set up Donald Trump, Ukrainian meddling in our election. I was over there in August before all this blew up. I was knowledgeable of the what I view to be either crimes or certainly unethical activity in Ukraine by American officials. I was over there shooting that film, a 53-minute TV documentary. When my agent on the book side found out I was doing that, he pushed my original book, Putin Won, to August of 2020 and asked me to write quickly a companion book to go alongside my film. Right now, the film is called Impeachment Ukraine, Money and Murder on Maidan. Because it's not just money, people. There has been full-blown mass shootings over this stuff in Ukraine. If you don't understand the full history, you can't really appreciate what's really going on with this whole Ukraine impeachment. So I expand the film, which is 53 minutes, in order to be played on a TV network. And to, a longer what they call breaking news paperback called Impeachment Ukraine. And they will be available on Amazon, a DVD or download and book for price uncertain through Bombardier Books. And I'm in negotiations right now with a major network, which cannot be named, to air the TV documentary in the near future. Not sure if that's going to happen. It's my first TV documentary, so I would be, incredibly lucky to have a network actually play it. We'll see if it happens. I'm in negotiations to win, but quick question here. Do you have audiobooks available? The book will be available in audio. Hopefully, in the first run of the book, I'm actually going to translate it also into Ukrainian so the Ukrainians can understand the perspective I bring of what the American people and the American national security apparatus has been doing in Ukraine for quite some time. It's ugly, people. What Hunter Biden did there in a no-show job for several million dollars for 5 years on the board of directors of one of the most corrupt companies in Ukraine, one of the most corrupt companies in the world, that's what happens. It's not unusual. It shouldn't, of course, the vice president's son is stupid to think nobody's going to say anything. In fact, when they announced him joining the board, I was on the air here climbing all over it. But what's interesting, and I believe different about my perspective here, is that I've dug into it a bit, and you're starting to see some of this now. The U.S. embassy in Kyiv has been a hotbed of this activity for quite some time. And, during the Obama administration, they beefed up with these Obama-friendly professional diplomats, junior diplomats, who all believed in the Soros kind of Soros/Obama, because they're very much the same, socialist view, certainly the progressive view of how a new nation emerging from communism, for example, should join the family of man. And it didn't matter what the people of the former Soviet Union nations thought themselves. The U.S. government, in cahoots with Soros, the European Union, oftentimes individual countries of the European Union, would force them into obedience, right? And here's the problem, and what I look at in my book, the Impeachment Ukraine book. I think what they've been doing for quite some time, they're on their way over to do it here. And let me explain real quickly. The year 2000, there was a coup, a revolution in Serbia. 2000, Slobodan Milosevic was overthrown by progressive political forces who were put together, arguably with the assistance of the West in some nascent ways, the assistance of George Soros and his non-government organizations, open society institutes, and the billions of dollars he's funding. The people who overthrew Slobodan Milosevic were on the cutting edge, on the front lines of the Soros kind of later Obama-led foreign policy on regime change. In 2003, we had emerging in Georgia what they called the Rose Revolution. 2003, George Soros sent some of the activists and leaders of the Rose Revolution to study the Serbian Revolution 3 years prior, sent them to Belgrade to have a series of meetings with the people who overthrew Slobodan Milosevic. You understand, this was within a month of his reelection, Milosevic was overthrown, right? Doesn't matter if you were elected. Perhaps these elections can be illegal or poor, or legally influenced. We've seen a lot of bad elections in these emerging markets in the past. But indeed, they overthrew Milosevic. The people who, you know, the Soros types and all the people around Soros, the U.S. International diplomats, we all kind of agreed that the pro-Russia Severnadze regime in Georgia needed to go. And so they sent – Soros paid people to go study the previous one. They came back. Sure enough, 2003, the Georgian president, Shevardnadze, was overthrown. And in comes a guy named Saakashvili, right? You understand, these are – all steps in a direction. There is a team of people who work together, Soros, a lot of people from the Obama State Department, National Security Apparatus, a lot of people from England, UK. I'm telling you, the UK is woven all the way through this. They're also woven all the way through the attempt to unseat Donald Trump, right? They work together in order to force regime change. We saw it in North Africa, in the Middle East. There are still hundreds of thousands of people starving because of our activities there, because of our addiction to regime change, the kind of neoconservative bent that we want a pro-America government here by hook or by crook. This is what happened in Ukraine in 2014 as well. All of this movement toward kind of seditious regime change inspired by outside, you know, forces like the United States and Soros and the European Union and et cetera, this kind of all culminated in 2014 in Ukraine. What they did is they overthrew Yanukovych, who was not popular with his people because of some recent decisions he had made. But he had been elected, and the election had been confirmed as at least, you know, palatable. Some irregularities, but they were declared legal. And the United States got behind what was a coup. The unfortunate part was only two people died in Serbia. I don't think anybody died in Tbilisi, Georgia in 2003. 100 people were killed in 20 minutes by snipers in the central square of Kiev in February 20th of 2014. 130 people were killed in total in what looked to be about 3 months, 3.5 months of protests that got increasingly violent. I know about this because I have family who were at the protests. My wife is from Ukraine. My long way around the barn explanation is this. This, you know, have elections, complain about the results of the elections, overthrow the elected person, bring in international aid, pour that aid in there, have new elections, elect people who are more friendly to the coup purveyors, and start all over again. It's a cycle, right? And the cycle is moving here to the United States. That's my point. The cycle is moving here to the United States. Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It was great to hear from David today. He's having a wonderful holiday. I hope you are having a great holiday season as well. I hope you're able to take time off. If not, you're in your car coming home on a Friday. Congratulations. Enjoy your holiday weekend. But what did I mean by what I said just before the weather? the revolutions of regime change that were sponsored by the Obama State Department and in cahoots with, you know, European nations of the same mind, and the Soros program of changing regimes until it meets the kind of requirements that Soros has, right? Soros is not in this just because he's a progressive. That's part of it. But he's also in it because he's involved in chiefly energy, oil and gas. He makes billions of dollars off of oil and gas and other energy-related companies. And frankly, I think that's probably even more than his progressive values that drives what he's doing. He didn't like the fact that the Russians were about to take over the supply of oil in Ukraine and take over probably even the distribution of energy in Ukraine when they decided to get closer to Russia. So he encouraged all the same people he trained in Serbia, who trained in Georgia, to pull a coup through a violent protest in Kyiv, Ukraine. Now, when I tell you that Serbians and Georgians were in the crowd when 130 people were murdered and the regime of Yanukovych was overthrown, don't be surprised. It's absolutely true. There were Serbians with experience from 2000, Georgians with experience from 2003 in the crowd helping people understand what they should do next in order to overthrow Yanukovych. And our American diplomats were wandering around in the crowd stirring things up. John McCain flew over to Kyiv to take a walk around and stir things up. These are all the same people. And they're coming to the United States with this program. The reason I'm telling you that I know that this is where it's going is because you see where Soros' money goes in America, and it's about regime change. It's about stopping Donald Trump, the biggest donor to Hillary Clinton, by millions, I think $12 million to her whatever, you know, her electoral organizations, and all of his money going into trying to defeat Donald Trump's his policies and his initiatives all around the country in many different ways. He's devoted billions of dollars to these progressive causes. And now if you see the TV ads about the Senate trial, about impeachment, those TV ads are paid for by Soros. So Soros is as invested in changing the regime in the United States as he has been invested in regime changes in the past. And what we don't understand here is how all of this is almost exactly a photo comparison, exactly the same as what went on in Kyiv, what went on in Tbilisi, what went on in Serbia, and so many other places where Soros and the American embassies were in play. And part of that is violence. There's no doubt in my mind that we have violence coming, because without violence, there is no coup. There is no regime change. At some point, they're going to have to start killing people. Well, anyway, that's great news, right? I'm going to get back to the text board, 303-803-0930, taking your calls here on WBEN.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Bowerly and Bellavia. Michael Caputo in for Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. 5:37, just another 23 minutes of dealing with me, and then I'll be off to Mister's in East Aurora to hang out with my pals. I know the Molinos are in the car on their way to Mister's. I know the Egans are on their way to Mister's now. I'm going to be a little late. My kids will be there on time. But what a nice way to spend a Friday evening with your kids at a place where both types of humans can enjoy themselves, adults and children. I also want to shout out very quickly to the men and the lady of C.J. Andrews. Andrews Barber Parlor in East Aurora, the coolest spot on Main Street. I love going there. Those people are the coolest. They're very, very kind people, always working with the community, keeping all the men handsome in East Aurora. Not only is it a great place to live, work, and play, they're also there. We have the handsomest men in all of Western New York because of Andrew's Barber Parlor. Great folks. I know you're listening there at the barbershop. High five to every one of you guys. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I was talking earlier about the potential for violence. I really wish I could tell you how to that we can avoid it. I don't know how. I don't know that it's my job or yours to be on the cutting edge of peace in this whole situation. Somebody's got to take that job. I don't think it'll be me. My wife and children and I are tired of being on the on the front line of this whole thing. That's why I'm not running for public office. I've promised my wife that we'll be able to recover. It doesn't mean I'm going to shut my mouth, but I'm not working on the reelection. And from my perspective, I'm going to protect my family, not try and stop anything from happening unless, I don't know, I get a call from the Pope or something. Or Yeezy, maybe if I hear from... Oh, well, I don't know. The problem I see is that the revolutions like Serbia in 2000, the revolutions like Tbilisi, Georgia in 2003, when you compare them to the revolution against a legitimately elected president in Ukraine, both of the leaders, Milosevic in Serbia and Shevardnadze in Georgia, walked away because they didn't want to be the reason there was violence. They knew violence was coming. In fact, if you looked at the faces of the protesters in those, you knew they were inches away from it, right? And what happened in Ukraine in 2013, 2014, during what they call the Maidan protests, is the people who fomented the revolutions in Serbia and like-minded people in Georgia were there, and like-minded people were there in Ukraine, and nothing was happening. There was a standoff. It went on for months. There was no end in sight. The anti-government protesters who, people who were anti-Russia, we would probably side people pro-American folks in that crowd. Americans, typically, we supported the protesters. They were nose-to-nose with the police, and the police weren't going to give up. Yanukovych did not have any kind of idea in his heart that he wanted to avoid bloodshed. He depending upon who you believe, he didn't think it was going to come. But, of course, snipers showed up on the rooftops around the Independence Square, the Maidan, and started shooting police and protesters alike. What happened was the system of regime change didn't work like it did in Serbia and in Tbilisi, Georgia, and many, many, many other places where the elected president said, look, I'm out. I don't want to see people killed. It's not worth it to me. In Ukraine, it came down to murder. And if you saw the faces and the footage of those protests, they all got to a certain part where there was just hate in between both sides. And if it weren't for the elected leader stepping down, there would have been bloodshed in Kiev. There was bloodshed. And if you looked in the eyes of those protesters, you see a familiar look to the protesters we see in the United States today. I don't think that when Donald Trump wins re-election, that the protests will ever stop. I think they will escalate. I think they'll be orchestrated and funded, just like the protests after his last election in 2016, funded by many different groups, including George Soros, and it was Black Lives Matter, Soros money, the Pink Hat protest, the Women's March after the president's inauguration, partially George Soros money. The protests at the airports, if you remember, they were trying to shut down airports. That was Soros money. But, of course, a lot of other money comes in and causes this disruption. The same thing, the Kavanaugh stuff, the anti-Kavanaugh activity when the president nominated Brett Kavanaugh as Justice of the Supreme Court, also funded by Soros and like-minded people. It's the way, you know, a republic, a democracy works. There's a First Amendment. You're allowed to speak. And the money can come from anywhere. The problem this time around is that Donald Trump's not going to give up. If he is reelected again, he will be as stubborn about holding on to his office as he has been for the last 3 years. He will not give up. And at that point, my question is, who pays for the snipers? Because we still don't. Almost 6 years in February, we do not know who paid for this. There's been no trial. Who paid for the snipers in Ukraine? These people who shot down, evidence points to the fact that they were speaking Russian. They're probably Russian, but I traveled all over talking to, as part of my film, which is coming out, talking to people who said that they were the snipers, right? You'll see if you watch the film, it gets really nitty gritty, undisclosed locations in the film and such. From my perspective, we do not know who paid for the snipers on the Maidan in February 2014. We don't know. We won't know. We probably will never know. Nobody I know in Ukraine believes they will ever know who those snipers were. Somebody paid for it. We don't know who did. Somebody has to pay for it. People don't just walk to the top of buildings in those kinds of highly political situations without having instructions. It's the truth. There were reports out of the BBC that somebody from the protesters' side went up on a roof and started firing at police. They actually interviewed the guy who said he did it. You never know about this. People died. They were murdered on Maidan. The largest nation in Europe. 6 years later, we have no idea who did it. And everybody's lying about it, including the United States. So when I tell you this is a process where at the end of the process, if the regime just doesn't flip and change without violence, there will be violence. And in my opinion, the same people ginning this up globally are those who are ginning it up locally, in the United States. That's my opinion. It's an informed opinion. I know it sounds paranoid. I know when my film comes out, I can tell you I will be called an anti-Semite because I'm criticizing George Soros. That's how they protect George Soros. You know, even though George Soros he's Jewish, but he worked on the side of the Germans as a boy. He lived and pretended to be a Christian during the Holocaust, had nothing to do with it, and then basically is not a practicing in any religion today. But, of course, talking about Soros is anti-Semitic because that shuts people up. I'm not going to shut up. I'm not anti-Semitic. If you think I'm anti-Semitic because I'm talking about George Soros, then you're reading talking points. That's all you're doing. I have no interest in arguing that point. So, in my opinion, it's on the way. I'll protect my family. I hope you protect yours. David in Toronto, how are you?
Hello?
Hi, David.
Yes, how are you?
Good. What's up?
I just want to know what Ukraine had in the game to support either Trump or Hillary. They're a very small player. I'm surprised that you and Mr. Rudy Giuliani and everybody else is saying that they had something to do with the elections.
They did. They did, David. Great question. It's a very good question. The Ukraine got into messing around in the American elections because the president's campaign chairman, who turned his campaign around and headed him toward victory, Paul Manafort, was managing all the political options, all the political actions of the president of Ukraine, who was toppled in a coup. So they were trying to get dirt on Manafort because if they knock Manafort out, when you take out the campaign chairman, you can usually destroy a campaign. At least, depending upon the timing, you can destroy the campaign at a proper time where they don't have time to put in a new manager and win. That's what they did. They also were providing information from Washington as well as Kiev. They were absolutely deliberately meddling in the American elections. But
no, but the question is why?
What's that? Why? Because Hillary Clinton was going to win, and Hillary Clinton was the Obama team was not giving military aid to Ukraine in their fight against Russia at all. So they wanted to get closer than before than they were with John Kerry under Obama to get closer to Hillary Clinton and her State Department, so they would come across the decision line and actually give lethal aid, weapons.
They were trying to curry favor with Hillary.
Yes.
To get aid to fight against Russia.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, if that is the case, now fast forward to 2019. Aid was given to them before by Trump camp, admin. In 2018 or 2017, they were given some aid.
Right.
So Congress approves $400 million, okay? And Mr. Trump decides to withhold that aid without letting anyone know.
Right.
Okay, he did not inform the Republicans or the Congress or the Senate or the National Security Council. Nobody knew that the aid was being withheld.
Right.
Why?
I got to tell you, just from my experience with the president, he despises foreign aid. He doesn't like it. He thinks it's largesse when we have so many problems at home.
But he gave the aid before?
Yes, he did. But he did. And
so he gave them aid before in 2018.
Right. And by the way, even though the Congress authorized military aid to Ukraine during the last years of the Obama administration, they never delivered the aid that was authorized. So the first military aid that Ukraine got was from Trump. And he wanted to re-examine the policy to do so.
But what was so difficult for Mr. Trump to tell Congress and tell the American people that, look, I do not trust this government, whatever the reason, that once I'm satisfied, then we will deal with the aid whether to give them or not.
Right.
Keep it a secret.
Right. I got to tell you, most presidents would have done it differently. I have not liked the way that those presidents have acted in other ways. The president is indelicate in his diplomacy. We know that.
It's not a question of delicacy or indelicacy.
Mm-hmm.
The problem here is that the whole issue with Mr. Trump, to tell you honestly, he is very arrogant. He thinks he can do whatever he feels like. He made the statement that he can shoot somebody in Times Square and still people will be behind him.
Right.
That's a very wrong statement to make. He could have said that his people are so attached to him that they will support him under any adverse condition.
David, I don't disagree with you on any of that.
Nobody.
I don't disagree with you. You're right. He does things very differently.
See, there's a difference between being arrogant and doing things differently.
Right, but arrogance is not an impeachable offense.
But the impeachable offense is that I have followed this thing very closely. Mm-hmm. The July 25th call is not that important. What happened prior to that is important.
Mm-hmm.
Conversations, the emails, the text messages between Sondland and other people. Now, Mr. Giuliani very openly says that he was the one who orchestrated Yovanovitch ouster from the embassy.
Got it.
I mean, he does things the wrong way. That's number one issue. And the reason why he does things the wrong way, because he doesn't give a crap about anybody.
Well, you know, I got to go to traffic and weather here, David, but you're not wrong. The president doesn't care what people in the Beltway think. And if you don't support him, he doesn't care what you think. And that isn't, you know, politics is a game of addition, not subtraction. Somehow Donald Trump still wins, even though he plays subtraction sometimes. It drives political professionals crazy. People on his own team pull their hair out. But that's the way he does it, and that's what he's done for 3 years, and he'll do for another five. Get to another call because I'm coming to the end of my shift, the end of my Christmas week shift, which I really always enjoy. Let me go with Ron in Ontario. How are you? Hey, Ron. One more time. Ron, are you there? Okay, Ron, thanks anyway. Dan on the west side, how are you?
Oh, Mike, how are you? I haven't talked to you in a long time.
Yeah, how you doing? I can barely hear you.
All right, let me try moving. As we're going through talking about all these really convoluted European involvements or foreign ensnarements or whatever. You went by one that really still bothers me a lot, and that is the Clinton Balkan intervention, because it went completely unscrutinized in the American media and politics. No one opposed it. Everyone took it at absolute face value, and I happen to know better. And I've never brought anything up to you that you didn't already know, so now we've got to compare notes. It's my understanding, the short version, that it was actually the Saudis who wanted the Clintons to construct this intervention the way they did, because they wanted support and help for Islam in Europe, the cause of Islam in Europe. And the only magazine that really did a good job scrutinizing this whole thing was the libertarian magazine called Liberty. All the writers came out and wrote about it. Only one supported the Clinton Balkan intervention, and it stunk to high heaven. I mean, it was one of the murkiest things that they ever did, and that's really saying something.
It really is. I mean, Dan, we're going to have to go because we're at a hard break here, but you're absolutely right. The Balkans were a part of this. This is a slow march toward progressive regime change all the way across the board. Here in the United States, I believe it's coming. When Donald Trump is reelected, you're going to see this anger graduate to a level that you've never, never, never seen before. Your vote's going to count in 2020. Your vote's going to count in every election up to that. All of this begins on the local level. Support your party, no matter what it is. As long as you support America, I encourage you to just vote. Let me tell you, 2020 is going to be worse than 2019. We all deserve better. We're not going to get better. When Trump is reelected in 2020, they're going to go nuts again. This time, there won't be limits, because this time, they can't withstand four more years. Ruth Bader Ginsburg will be replaced, as well as another judge probably, and the Supreme Court will be conservative for two generations. They can't stand that. They won't stand for it. Thank you for inviting me in your home this week. I've really enjoyed being with you. This is Michael Caputo. And for Tom and Dave on Bowerly and Bellavia, you have a great New Year's, folks.